Welcome back to DevelopLex. On this week's episode, we had Dow Porter. Dow is a principal at Shield Environmental in town, and just an interview that had just a ton of rich information on environmental. What were your thoughts on this interview, Ross?
This was a great interview. This is kind of like going to advanced mode in a video game where this is what developers are actually dealing with every day and what folks that are going through an acquisition are thinking about every day with environmental phase ones, phase twos. It's a great peek inside the curtain of a real developer's day.
Yeah, absolutely. Dow had the ability to make environmental assessment as complicated as some of those 100-page reports look to be, but he is so good at breaking down why environmental assessments and why it's our obligation as people in and around real estate to really honor the development that we do and the way that we treat the land and the soil and all of the things so well. I think that he was able to articulate the value that his firm adds as well as just the value in doing environmental assessments really well.
And if you are a history buff, you are especially going to love this one, because a lot of what goes into the environmental phase ones is seeing what happened in the past. So you're going to hear some stories of what used to be in Lexington and how that still has impacts on today.
Let's get into it. Welcome back to DevelopLex. Today you have a solo interview. It's just me, Weston Lockhart, and Dow Porter. Also, welcome back to just season three in general. We've had a little bit of a hiatus here, but we're excited to get into some different parts of the industry, I believe. Obviously, we've had a lot of developers, investors, the traditional roles that you think of when you think of development. But I think a huge part of this season is there are a lot of moving pieces to real estate and real estate development. So we'll obviously have like the traditional people that we would have on in years past. But there are a lot of different facets of the industry that actually make deals tick and actually get deals across the finish line. And so in that same breath, I'm sitting here with Dow Porter, who owns a company called Shield Environmental here based in Lexington. I was really good friends with Dow's son for years. It was actually my intro to Dow. And then Dow may not talk about it, but he also is a real estate investor. But yeah, kind of salt of the earth guy that has been around Lexington for a really long time and has helped a lot of real estate investors get some of their goals done. So I'll let Dow get into his own background, but Dow, welcome on.
Well, thanks for having me, Weston.
So let's just start kind of the standard. Where are you from? How did you get to where you're at today? Sure. Talk as much or as little as you want about your background.
One point of clarification. I'm an owner.
An
of
owner.
Environmental.
Sorry.
I have 10 other business partners. So I'm grew up in Frankfort, 22 miles away, and came to UK for college in 1982. And have not been back or lived any place other than Lexington since then, well, except for that one summer after college. But yeah, so I've been, employed professionally in Lexington since 87, and married a Lexington girl, happens to be a realtor. And so we live here in Lexington. It's home, and if three boys that are now grown men. And of course, one of my sons is also a realtor. So
real estate family.
Real estate family for sure. Yeah.
Well, cool. So you got to Lexington as a part of University of Kentucky, ended up staying. What kept you in Lexington outside of the fact that you married a Lexington girl?
Well, that was primarily it. I knew I didn't want to go home. Frankfort was a great place to grow up. It just wasn't where I wanted to raise my family. And then I was hired by a company named Waste Management. So, the country's largest garbage company, pick up trash and landfills and stuff like that. And they hired me as an outside sales rep, and had a pretty good degree of success with that and moved up to a sales manager's role. And then at some point, they asked me to move into kind of a technical sales role, working for the landfills. And I did that for 12 years, and I quickly learned that corporate America was not for me. You know, you're just a name and a number on a piece of paper, and nobody knows anything about you other than your performance or what your cost is or something like that. And so I was working for waste management, and we had three landfills in central Kentucky that I was responsible for the sales part of. And one of the very first big projects that I got involved in was on behalf of Shield Environmental. They had come to me and said, we have this big remediation project. We'd like for you to handle the waste coming off of this remediation project. And I ended up also handling the transportation. And through that, I got to know the folks at Shield and was really impressed with, you know, how small and nimble and yet how creative they were. And so at some point, they were looking to expand their service portfolio and knew I had a background in industrial industries around central Kentucky, and they thought that would play well. So they hired me as their marketing manager.
That's awesome.
25 years later, you know, now I'm the managing principal. So.
And how did you, I'm curious, just to take one step back, did you study something at UK that was even remotely related to?
Not at all.
Okay.
Which is rare, really. I have a business degree. And then all of my environmental education came from classes, you know, after college.
Yeah.
And that's why I need partners, right? And my partners are professional engineers, professional geologists, environmental scientists. And so it takes a team, you know, well-rounded team to do what we do.
Awesome. That's really cool. So we touched on Shield. I want to give an affirmation as well before we really get into the nitty-gritty of what Shield does. And the value that you add. I think, so we're going to be talking about environmental, which is a huge, especially in commercial real estate and commercial real estate development. Environmental is a really massive portion of due diligence for a developer, buyer, whatever. It's something that we don't really ever talk about on the show. And so we thought it would be really important to touch on that. So that's one. Two, I think that environmental studies in particular get a bad rap oftentimes by people that are just trying to get deals done, quote unquote. What I have come to learn over the last 5 years with knowing Dow is Dow is very much a deal maker, and his company like gets deals across the finish line. I remember the first project that we worked on was a little retail location in downtown Lexington. And I remember Dow coming up to me during the phase one process and saying something like, we're going to get this done. And I was like, whoa, that was a different connotation than I thought it was associated with environmental. Oftentimes you think of if something bad comes up, or not bad, but if anything comes up, then it's like deal's dead. Dow's role is very much not that. It is, I'll let him explain his own role, but I've just come to realize that you getting involved in the process is a net positive, and we can get more into that, but I know that you will be humble in that capacity. So I want to make that very clear to the audience that you add value, and that is a valuable part of the due diligence process. So we touched on it a little bit, but let's go into exactly what Shield is and what your capacity is.
Sure. So Shield's environmental engineering and consulting firm. We have an office here in Lexington, an office in Louisville, 26 employees. you could, you know, the elevator speech would be basically three spheres of service. We have a group that provides permitting and compliance work for industrial facilities, whether that's, you know, complying with the Clean Air Act or the Clean Water Act or RCRA. You know, if an industry makes a widget, they bring in chemicals, they have discharges, they need permits. And so we have a group that does that. We have one group that focuses exclusively on underground storage tanks. So we don't install them, we remove them, and then we investigate after removal and clean them up. And then we have my group, which is focused pretty exclusively on real estate transactions. So we help buyers with their due diligence, whether that's a phase one or a phase two, or maybe chasing down a liability protection program. And then our group also gets involved in more of our, most of our firm's larger remediation projects, which are a lot of fun.
DevelopLex is sponsored by SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff in 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
When would you say, so say there's somebody that's listening out there that's a real estate investor, when, what is a use case scenario in which somebody involves a group like Shield?
Well, we get calls for a lot of reasons. A savvy investor wants to know more about the property. Lenders oftentimes will call because the loan has met a certain dollar threshold, which irks me, because if it's an apartment complex on a piece of property like Hamburg that was a horse farm, I really don't think a bank should request a phase one because of the dollar amount of the loan. Conversely, if it's a $50,000 piece of property on a corner, it could be $1 million cleanup, and a lender may not request a phase one because of the dollar amounts involved. So the sooner a prospective buyer gets us involved, usually the better.
Okay. And you just hit on a couple of the terms that someone like me would know loosely: phase one, phase two, and then liability protection program.
Sure.
Phase one is the one that I feel like a lot of people throw that word around and don't actually understand what it means. They just know it's a part of the due diligence process and doing a transaction. Can you explain what those three facets of the business and the environmental study
sure.
are?
So lenders request that we follow an ASTM guideline on performing an environmental site assessment, phase one environmental site assessment. It's the first step. And although we will visit a site and make visual observations, we're looking for obvious signs of contamination or subsurface features, vent pipes, whatever the matter may be. We'll visit a site and evaluate it. We'll also request open records from the state, municipalities, to see what's the history of, you know, available that we can look at on this piece of property. And then we actually use a third-party company who does a radius search around the target property, because we don't have the budget to look at the files for all of these properties within this radius, right? And so we'll hire a company who very quickly says, here's all the properties within this search radius, and here are the ones that have issues. Then we'll go and request those files so we can pare down, you know, maybe if you're in downtown Lexington or downtown Ashland, the amount of potential contributors or contaminated properties, you know, around that radius could be quite large. So we'll use that company, and that company also will provide us with historical aerial photos that go way back further than Google Earth can give us. They'll also provide us with Sanborn fire insurance maps from, you know, 1900s or late 1800s. And those are a wealth of, provide an assessor a wealth of information about a piece of property. And so once we gather all that information and we put it into a report, and then we make an opinion, and we'll tell the buyer whether or not there's a recognized environmental condition with a piece of property or not. And so if there's a recognized environmental condition, then a buyer may choose to perform what's called a phase two environmental site assessment. And that's where we bring our toys out. We have, right now we have four drill rigs. Don't really need four, but I like toys. And so, and through that process, we have the ability to push a sampler into the ground and pull up a discrete sample and then screen it in the field for like volatility and see whether or not we find anything in the field. Then we'll package up a sample and ship it off to a third-party laboratory for analysis. We'll get that data back and we'll interpret that and compare it to what the cleanup standards are in Kentucky. And then we can very confidently tell somebody, you have a problem with this piece of property. And so the next phase would be how do we deal with it? What do we do next? So we could, oftentimes you'll go into another phase to where, look, we only poked 10 holes on this piece of property and it's, you know, 5 acres. We found two with some contamination, but we don't know how deep, how far, how wide the contamination has migrated. And so oftentimes we'll do a follow-up investigation to kind of put our arms around and be able to quantify for a buyer how big this problem may be. And then the liability protection is not new, but it's relatively new. A program that was pushed by the Environmental Protection Cabinet, and it's called Kentucky's Brownfield Redevelopment Program. I personally think they made a mistake in naming it because people have this negative connotation with brownfields because of the federal brownfield program.
Yeah. Also, the word brownfield doesn't sound super appetizing.
As opposed to a greenfield?
Yeah.
So I think the program maybe could have gotten more traction quicker if it had been called the Buyer Liability Protection Program, because if a person, a buyer, goes through the hoops required, then they can get a letter from the Department for Environmental Protection that says, you didn't cause this contamination on this property, so we'll never ask you to go characterize the site or to remediate the site. However, you must have a management plan in place, and that management plan must be prepared and signed off on by a professional geologist or professional engineer. And it's the buyer's way of telling the state, we had a gas station, or we had a manufacturing plant, or we had a transmission shop, and we're going to redevelop that property into something else. There are impacts, and here's the way we're going to manage those impacts and reduce the risk of exposure to human health.
Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Stephen at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project, windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say, we build with integrity.
My first question would be, when a property moves into phase two and you guys poke some holes, and I was a kid because I like the phrase poke some holes that Dow uses. So you guys poke some holes in the property and there's some, it's quote unquote hot, or it's there's some sort of something that comes back that's not like, okay, we're good to go. What choice does a buyer have at that point? Is there a choice? Do they have to enter? Do they have to take further steps before they close on a property? What choices do they have?
Well, their first choice is to walk away from the property. They're under no obligation, right? I mean, from an environmental perspective, the information that we develop and provide to a buyer is the buyer's information. Now, if the seller is involved in this, and we find that a release has occurred on a piece of property, then under Kentucky statute, the seller has an obligation to report that to the state agency.
Mm.
But the buyer, on the other hand, subject to the terms of the contract, right, maybe they walk away. Maybe they ask us, what's the worst case scenario that this issue, these impacts on the property could cost me? And so a lot of times for buyers, we'll develop kind of a worst case scenario. If you go in to redevelop the site and you've hit these impacts, then you're going to have to manage that. You're going to have to properly characterize and dispose of that offsite. Here's what that costing could possibly range. And then oftentimes they'll go back to the seller and say, hey, we want a cost concession because of these findings.
Yep.
Another option for the buyer would be, we want to enter this brownfield program and get some liability protection.
My second question to that would be, you touched on, in particular, you said downtown Lexington. I don't know if there's a lot of weight to this, but you said downtown Lexington or downtown Ashland
right.
are good examples. Is there, as we talk about and we'll get into in a minute, infill redevelopment, which is a big word sure. in Lexington. Is there a reason that a place like downtown would be more suitable to involve in environmental studies than a place like Hamburg in general?
Well, if you think about the history of Lexington and Town Branch and Water Street and railroads and all of the development was centered around those features going through downtown and up Midland Avenue. So, there's a lot of potential for historic use problems on those properties as opposed to a horse farm.
Yeah, yeah.
On a horse farm, the biggest things we find on a horse farm is oftentimes we'll find old heating oil tanks because they didn't have natural gas, or we'll find a dump site where, they mm-hmm. threw their waste away in a sinkhole or dug it out, whatever. But for the most part, you're talking about a greenfield. So, yeah, and from an assessor's perspective, if we target a piece of property and it's in a greenfield and there are no records around it, there's no development around it, and never has been, it's a pretty easy property to assess. But the minute you go into any developed area, and it can be Ashland or Frankfort or Winchester or Nicholasville, there's a lot of records available within this search radius. So just think about how we get paid. Time is money. And so the more time we spend, the more expense we need. So when somebody asks me what's a phase one cost, I always want to know the particulars. Where is it? How big is it? How big's the property? What's it been used for? Tell me what you know about it. And then that helps me kind of formulate what the expense should be to provide our services.
That makes complete sense. My follow-up to that would be, because you guys are doing so much work in Lexington, are there certain areas of town that you just automatically know you're going to have to do some more work, generally speaking?
Yes, for sure. And when you've been doing it as long as we have, I mean, our firm started in 1983. And so we've been practicing this field for a long time.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have any employees remaining from 1983. In fact, the founding father from 1983 just retired last fall. But there are definitely, conversely, there's areas of town where we've assessed so many pieces of property that I know what the concerns are, mm-hmm. or I know there are no concerns. Mm. I can't remember who it was in your office, but this is a really good typical day for me, or I wish it was a typical day, but this is an example of a really good day for me. I got a phone call from an agent in your office. Hey, I'm getting ready to have this guy call you. He's buying a piece of property on Prosperous Place. Not 15 minutes after I got off the phone with him, the guy's banker called me and said, hey, I've got a client who's buying a piece of property on Prosperous Place. I said, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So I got two referrals, you know, and so the guy calls me and he goes, hey, man, I guess you're the guy because both my realtor and my banker told me I should call you. And I was able to quickly, you know, pull up that property, look at it and say, look, there's no historic issues that are going to cause your deal to fall through. Okay. Still going to take us 3 weeks to go through the research, dot the I's, cross the T's. But very quickly, I was able to say, I'm familiar with that area of town. And so those areas are in town. And there are also areas in town where Southland Drive, which you and I, you know, worked on a deal on Southland Drive, you know, Southland Drive had a lot of gas stations. Mm. So another agent in your office called me recently and gave me an address. And I was, yep, that was a gas station. Mm. I know exactly the piece of property you're talking about. I know the history. You know, here it is.
Yep.
You know,
talking about history would lead me to my next question. How has your industry, we can be talking about from when you started 25 years ago to probably even something like 100 years ago, how has like the real estate industry changed its views on environmental, or maybe there were no views at one point the way that we treated the dirt that we build on. But is this like a changing topic within the last 10 to 20 years that there's been more light shone on environmental studies, or has this always been the case?
Yes, the advent of phase ones, you know, has really taken off, you know, in the last 20 years, 25 years within the industry. The industry has definitely changed. I mean, man, when I started at Shield, I didn't even have an email account, you know, at least I had a cell phone. When I started out of college, I didn't have either. I had a pager. You know, the office needed to get a hold of you. They paged you. You know, I knew where every payphone was that I could drive up to and not get out of my car and drop a quarter in, you know, call the office, make a phone call to a client, you know. But people, I think what's happened over the course of time is no matter who the lender is, they've been burned on a deal because of environmental. And so they take this stuff real serious now. Now, to your point early on, you said, environmental, you know, maybe it has a negative connotation. And to some lenders, maybe it's just a checkbox, you know, to get their loan deal passed, right? But I think the more educated people have become about the topic, the more educated, not about the topic, but about the potential ramifications of making a mistake or not assessing a property. Because under CERCLA, if you buy a piece of property and you did zero due diligence and you find out that property's got cancer, you own it. That's your liability. You did not perform due diligence. So in order to qualify for any type of legal defense, you have to perform what the federal government refers to as all appropriate inquiry. And so all of these things have evolved over the course of time to where, you know, this federal government developed this concept of, you know, bona fide prospective purchaser, innocent landowner defense, and then the states, you know, systematically have kind of jumped on the bandwagon and said, how do we make what the federal government recognizes play in Kentucky? And that's when that Brownfield redevelopment program came into place. It really mirrors what was already in place at a federal level. And so those types of changes, you know, are pretty dramatic to the industry. I mean, I remember sitting in on the reg vetting session. I was fortunate enough, you know, to be recognized, you know, as kind of an industry leader at the time, and was asked to sit in as the cabinet was developing this reg for this brownfield redevelopment program. And at some point they asked me for, you know, you're awful quiet. What are you thinking? Well, they had already said, hey, if you do this program and you've done your all appropriate inquiry, which is just a phase one, you don't necessarily have to have a phase two in order to get liability protection. And the first thing that my business mind said was, wow, my phase two business is going down the drain. Mm. And to be honest with you, we have seen a reduction in the number of phase twos on real estate transactions because of that program, because quite frankly, it's less expensive to go through that program than it is to have a phase two and then turn around and go through the program. But the more information a developer has about a piece of property, the more intelligent they become about making decisions on what they're going to do with the property, what type of protections, what type of issues they're going to run into. It's better to know that you're going to run into something ahead of time and plan for it than to, you know, wake up to that phone call from your superintendent that said, hey, we just uncovered something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really good. You guys have been around for a long time, so I'm sure that there have been a lot of success stories. And I think that, you know, obviously it's an industry that you probably can't talk about all of the projects that you've been involved in, or maybe people prefer that you not. But I am curious if there are some, I know there are some success stories. I would love to talk about some success stories, especially as it relates to Lexington and surrounding areas of Lexington. We touched on it a little bit earlier, and we were actually talking pre-interview just about the emphasis on infill redevelopment. So I think it would be really neat for maybe you to speak first into how you guys fit into the equation of infill redevelopment, as that's just a huge word in a place like Lexington currently, and then maybe talk about some success stories that you've had and give some people some like, yeah, this sounds like a really good solution for us. And it's not as scary as I think that it can be portrayed to be.
Well, the reality is the choice piece of properties have already been snapped up, right? So what's left? They're, you know, less desirable, or they have a history, or maybe, you know, it was a gas station, or it was, you know, something that, you know, has a, maybe it was a dry cleaner. Known, you know, contributor to impacts. So infield's the direction that Lexington needs to be looking at because of the pressure from the urban service boundary. You know, is it going to expand? You know, yes or no. You know, and
yes or no, but we're not gonna stop development up until then.
Correct. And so how do we figure out how to take this little hidden piece of property that's, you know, had a transmission shop or, you know, some dirty industry or potentially dirty industry on it, or, you know, and turn it into something else. And so to me, when somebody calls about a piece of property that's in it, you know, can be a potential infill, I love it. I mean, that really is what I enjoy the most about my job, is being able to take a piece of property or help a developer take a piece of property and show them the pathway to be able to resolve these environmental issues that are typically associated with what's left in, you know, for infill.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many little pockets of Lexington that you've seen pretty drastic changes in over the last, I mean, really, I'm 27 years old, probably over the last 15 years. Like, I can remember some of these quote-unquote districts that at one point were industrial districts. I don't know how much history they have with brownfield program and just environmental studies, but places like the distillery district, places like what is called now the warehouse block. I mean, literally both of those things were industrial territories at one point in Lexington, but they're both places in Lexington now where if you're have friends visiting on a Friday night from wherever,
take them to the distillery,
you're going to take them to one of those places. Right. But those are all a part of infield redevelopment. And so I think it gives some hope that there are educated people like yourself that can walk a developer through the process of actually doing infield redevelopment and not being scared of something that may or may not have hair, because it still has a wealth of potential because it's in a really, you know, hot area of Lexington. Yep. So with that said, are there any success stories that just immediately jump off the page that people would maybe know about that are listening to the podcast that you'd like to talk about?
Sure. from a brownfield redevelopment, we've done quite a few, not just in Lexington, but across Kentucky. Excuse me. That program has, I think, about 300 projects enrolled, properties enrolled in it right now. We've taken, I don't know, 50 or 60 properties through it. One of the ones that, you know, everybody knows was the old Taylor Distillery, which is now called Castle and Key. And so I started working on that property before the current owners looked at it, had a good feel for it. You know, this, obviously, if you know anything about that piece of property, if you've been to it, you know, they've done a wonderful job restoring it. But it had some environmental concerns. And so that all started with a phase one. And then we went out and we did some asbestos sampling. We did some soil sampling, created a management plan that they could that they could implement. And that was a really cool, I mean, today you look at what it is. It's,
yeah.
And it was just, you know, for me, you know, having been, you know, the guy that held the original owner's hands, you know, through the purchase process, you know, gives me a lot of satisfaction.
Yeah.
Another one is, you know, today the Lextran Transit Center on Loudoun Avenue sits on top of what used to be a General Electric plant. And, you know, there were significant impacts to groundwater on that site. They're still there. And when Lextran wanted to go through it, it was kind of cool because the program, the reg had not been promulgated yet. But everybody knew it was coming. Everybody knew it was going to be approved. And so I reached out to the Department for Environmental Protection and said, this is going to be a site that should go through this program. And they had great legal representation. They were tracking this development of this program as well. And so we actually took that site through the program before the reg was promulgated. And the cabinet said, we're going to go ahead and give them liability protection. Now, when they built that, because of the impacts, we did do some level of surface level remediation before construction started to remove exposure for the contractors. But the real problem with that site was vapors from the impacted groundwater coming up and creating an indoor air problem. And so all of those inhabited buildings on that transit center were built with a vapor barrier system
Wow.
from the ground up. So and, you know, transit center may not be near as exciting or sexy as Castle and Key, but because of the impacts found on that piece of property, you know, it's a pretty cool story.
Yeah.
Another project that, you know, I took great personal joy in working on is the GCH insurance office on Winchester Road, directly across from the GIF plant. Mm. That had been a transmission shop, and then in its next life, it was an auto repair shop. And when we walked through the property, you know, we found hydraulic lifts in the ground, trenches that were full of oil. We found, you know, there was an old oil storage tank in the back room that was completely full. There was a little bit of problem with that property, and the guys at GCH had, you know, already hooked up with a bank, and the bank had said, you know, we did a phase one and we found these problems. And the bank was like, nope, we're not going to loan you the money. And so they came to me and said, DP, what are we going to do? The bank won't. And I said, let's set up a meeting. And so we went in, we sat down and explained why, you know, they can manage these impacts. And we went in and we removed the impacts, cleaned the property up. We actually took that transaction through not only the brownfield program, but Kentucky has a voluntary environmental remediation tax credit. It's not a lot of money. It's $150,000. You have to spend it no more than 10 years and no quicker than 4. You have to claim it, and it's only state income. So not everybody's, you know, is going to get excited about that because it's not a ton of money, but it was enough to cover the cleanup on that piece of property. Those guys got their tax credit, and look what that piece of property looks like today. It's gorgeous.
Amazing.
You know, and they have this parking lot that they didn't have before. They have road exposure that they never had before, and their business has grown, you know. And, you know, John Hampton, the principal there, said, you know, it's because of where we are. You know, we get a lot of traffic. We get a lot of notoriety because of where we are that we didn't get when we were out in Hamburg hiding in an office condo.
Yeah.
That project was really, really cool for me.
Yeah. And that's the value too. And yeah, I think that's a huge part of the value that I would want to articulate through this interview is, as we continue to process in the world of real estate, how we can, Ross is pretty passionate about this. I wish he was sitting in the interview, how we can be very mindful of how we develop real estate. So not writing properties off because they have some sort of history, but instead trying to make our community better through building better properties, creating more community, you know, helping a business like GCH go from a condo in Hamburg to actually getting to, you know, have their name out for the world to see. That, you know, process is really not possible without an environmental study and somebody doing their due diligence on the front end of things.
Yeah. Several years ago, Lee Roberts owns Roberts Heavy Duty Towing. Extremely successful, hardworking guy, super neat guy. He reached out to me and said, hey, I want to buy this piece of property on 7th Street. And, you know, it was a metal recycling facility. He asked earlier, are there pieces of property or areas? Yeah, if it had been a junkyard or a metal recycler, you know there's going to be environmental impacts. So, you know, I told him, hey, man, guess what? There's going to be impacts. And so, how do we get around it? You know, and so we met and we talked and we looked at what his concept was. He needed an impoundment lot for his cars. He planned to already do some site improvements. And so we were able to take him through the brownfield program, get liability protection. And then through his normal site development, which he was going to do anyway, we built in an environmental protection, a barrier for his employees to have a layer of prevention, which consisted of a clay followed by a limestone cap across the entire, I think it's 7 acres. And now it's a huge impoundment lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a great reuse of, I mean, it's not apartment complexes. It's not a shopping center.
Yeah.
You know, sorry about that. But, and we need a place to park, to impound cars as well. Yeah. And so, what a great reuse of that otherwise very difficult piece of property for somebody to redevelop on.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's a ton of value added. Okay, let's, as we start wrapping things up, I do want to focus a little bit on Lexington because obviously you're a Lexington-based business and you're obviously a Lexington guy too. So, a few questions as it relates to Lexington, and this can be as much or as little about Shield as you'd like it to be. How do you feel like Lexington can continue to change for the better over the coming years?
Well, that's a tough question. I'm not for sure I'm the right guy to answer that. I tell you, yes, we're Lexington and Louisville based operation, but we literally work Pikeville to Paducah and in, you know, states around Kentucky. But more so from Lexington, we talked about what Kentucky offers from the voluntary corrective action tax credit. $150,000 is an insufficient amount if somebody's buying a former manufacturing plant and they want to do something cool with it. And there's impacts. So from a state perspective, I would love to see Kentucky dramatically raise that voluntary tax credit to where it's more than enough or not just sufficient for, you know, a little auto repair shop that's had some ice, you know, some superficial contamination, but enough to have an impactful redevelopment. where, you know, there's decent amount of money available. Whether or not the city of Lexington can do that, I don't know how.
Yeah.
But, you know, supporting infill is obviously a big one. Not fighting drive-thrus.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to allow electric charging stations, but we're not going to allow gas stations. I mean, that was kind of crazy. But
yeah. We're on the heel.
Listen, that's a really good question. I'm not sure I'm the right guy to answer all of it.
Hey, that's okay. These are opinions held by just Dow, not necessarily anybody else. But we do feel it's it's helpful to get conversations going. My follow-up question to that is, what do you feel most excited for about the future of Lexington? A football team does not count.
The level of activity post-COVID, I think, really excites me, because even though during COVID we stayed pretty busy, our business really isn't all that impacted by like economic down or economic swings. Like a geotechnical engineering firm, if construction stops, you know, their business really slows down. Our business, because we're pretty well-rounded and we're not focused exclusively on real estate or development, you know, our business, if you have a site that's being regulated by either the federal EPA or the state DEP, they don't care that you're not selling as many widgets as you once were. Mm-hmm. You got to continue working on it. So our business doesn't get really all that impacted. But I can say that there have been swings that I've felt or noticed where, you know, like last summer, interest rates were really starting to spike up. Inventory was really shrinking. The amount of assessments that we were called on to perform really slowed down. But about September, somebody turned the spigot open and, you know, it's crazy busy.
Yeah.
And so the amount of transactions that are occurring are great. The public participation in like Town Branch Parks, fantastic. The developers that are looking at these questionable pieces of property, you know, we talked earlier about the Midland Station developments coming to Midland across from DV8, you know, had been a gas station. In fact, there was two gas stations there in its later life, Lexington cut stone. And, you know, the fact that these guys, you know, were willing to listen, follow, implement, you know, take some direction and guidance on here's what I would do or here's what I recommend, you know, and then move forward on a project like that, you know, that's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that speaks to people. One, I think it's great that they would heed advice from professionals that have done it a lot. And I think it helps that you can tell success stories. But then obviously people have to be able to take the chance on developing something in, you know, call it in that instance, downtown Lexington. But they've seen the track record of how well the community responds to these projects like the Met with DV8 and Manchester Coffee, and then, you know, obviously Manchester Street and the Warehouse Block and all of these infill projects. It's like people gravitate towards those. We're being very clear that regardless of urban service boundary, regardless of the way that we develop in versus out, that we're going to be very supportive of the projects that we have and not gravitate towards other places. So,
yeah, well, people like to come downtown. People like to be able to ride their bikes. And so the trail system, I love it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, you can get across Lexington on a bike. I'm too old and out of shape to be able to do that. But, you know, somebody your age, you know, you can get on a bike and get from one end of town to the other end
of
town.
It's true. I've tried it a couple times. That's not my MO, but awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dow. I'll say it one more time. I think that casting a light on some of the different vendors and just people in the industry that really actually understand how to articulate their value proposition and how that can help real estate investors and developers do more deals, do more projects, and help the city out is, a huge thing for us. So super appreciative of you and the work that you do.
I appreciate that.